still some talk about the Red Wings and what they'll do and what they won't do. In fact, stories yesterday revolving around a potential major offer the Red Wings may have made to Columbus for Rick Nash. As you know, Ken, they wouldn't have been the only team to do that in the last 4 or 5 months. But Scott Housen, the GM there, is held pretty firm as to what he wants. And it just looks right now to be a price that none of the other 29 teams have been willing to pay.
And even if Detroit, even if that offer, you know, was 4 or 5 pieces and it included roster players, Rick Nash isn't coming to Detroit. Because to go into their building 3 times and 6 times in the same division to play Columbus, I don't think Scott Housen wants any part of that, to have Nash on a top line with either a Zetterberg or a Datsyuk, and providing they wouldn't have been part of the package, to play and beat Columbus in your own division. Scott Housen would be loath to deal Nash to Detroit, even if, on Rick Nash's list, that may be one of the 6 teams.
Kenny, I'm looking at Detroit, and although they've always been in the mix, there's a certain retirement this year that may hurt them. How's the rear guard going to be with a huge change back there?
Well, they're still in need of a top, if not top two, top four defenseman. I think they, you know, obviously seeing they have to do that through trade now, unless they want to wait like they did for Ryan Suter, that didn't happen. Wait a year for Shea Weber, which may not happen either. But I think they're going to try to look through trade. But certainly, you know, when you have Nick Cronwall and Ian White and Kyle Quincy, you know, it's not too bad. Brendan Smith's going to step up. I think Jonathan Erickson's going to play some huge minutes. He's 6'5". He's basically been in the shadows for a while, and that's the strange thing. As much as you're going to miss a Nick Lidstrom and you can't replace him, and let's not forget Brad Stewart is also gone because he wanted to return to the West Coast and ultimately did sign with San Jose. You need someone to step up, and whether it be Erickson or Kindle or someone to play bigger minutes, now's their chance with Nick Lidstrom not there. But I still think they have to probably, there are a few, I guess, available, whether it be a Kabina or, as you know, from Toronto days, Koliakovo's available. There aren't those stud defensemen available, so if they're going to do something, it may have to be through trade, because replacing Nick Lidstrom is next to impossible.
Ken Daniels, our guest. We never think it in other markets, and I don't think in Detroit either, but there being pressure on the likes of Mike Babcock and Ken Holland. They put tremendous pressure on themselves, being as competitive and as accomplished as they are. But it's been a while since the Wings would have gone 4 years at least not making the conference finals. As you note, that there still is work to do to get the roster ready for this season. But how do you view the expectations coming in? Are they a little lower than they generally have been? And I'd argue for 20 years, it's been, hey, if we don't at least make the cup final, we had something of a disappointing season.
Yeah, that would be true, especially, you know, the last 16 years you win a cup once every 4 years on average. I'd still say in this league that's pretty darn good, and considering that they've won the cup since the salary cap was introduced as well. So pretty good, but yes, the expectations, I think you're right, Greg, I think have been lowered to some extent, and just considering, you know, with the salary cap, and who knows what's going to happen with the next CBA, just how parity's taken over the league. But I think they're still going to be a very competitive team, should still be a playoff team, even with what they have in L.A. winning the cup from an 8 seed. I don't know whether L.A. was necessarily an 8 seed. I think they were better than that, but has that horrible start to the year. So, yes, I think the expectations have been lowered somewhat, but I still think the expectation is this team is going to make the playoffs.
Hey, Ken, you mentioned the CBA just a minute ago. Hey, I know, having watched it last year, you know what your chair feels like now, the prospect of no games and I mean, it's early in the negotiating process still, which is good for the NHL, but they've got a big event planned, that Winter Classic with a couple of original 6 teams, Toronto and Detroit. I mean, with the alumni rosters, it's a huge event. Are there any kind of whispers or people kind of walking lightly thinking this might not get done? There's no way that thing's going to die, is it?
You'd like to think not, and I don't think that will. Whether the season starts on time, I doubt that. I'm still thinking like a lot of people do, not that we know from anything, because really no one does except those in the negotiations. I'm still thinking Thanksgiving, and you could put that to the NBC contract. I'm talking about the American Thanksgiving. The NBC contract should start right after that, and I keep hearing December 1st would be the deadline if you have to get a month in there if you're going to play the Winter Classic. So the NHL has always, more often than not, worked to deadlines, and that's why I don't think there's an urgency right now. The deadline right now is September 15th, and I think the next one after that would probably be early December to get the Winter Classic in.
Ken Daniels, our guest on Brady and Lang. We mentioned Seoul. I'd love for you to reflect on your memories of being there, and if you felt like that the rest of us did in Canada, that the Ben Johnson victory and then the subsequent positive drug test was just such a freight train. A lot of us, even watching the Olympics as huge fans, sort of lost focus after that. It must have been incredibly difficult with everything flying around and the speculation as to who happened, who knew what, when, to do what you had to do the rest of that particular Olympics, was it?
Yeah, well, not for me, because I had so many different sports going on, and you were so focused and being just young in television. I started in TV in 85, so this was 88. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you're learning, I was doing canoeing and kayaking and velodrome and road race and all that stuff, sports that I knew very little about, which you just certainly just got into. And with the 15-hour time difference, I do remember the morning, though, when news broke back here, I guess, and it was the nighttime that Ben Johnson was discovered to have the test, that the lights just started coming on. I got a phone call in Press Village, and then I get the call from our people at CBC just saying, here, heads up today, here's what may or may not be pushed back, whatever. And you just looked out your window at Press Village, and again, it was the very early morning hours, and you looked and you just started to see all the lights come on in Press Village, where everybody was being notified. And that was the thing that I remember most about that day. But it took a lot of the steam out at that time. I know the joke at the time was whenever we got into a taxi cab to go to an event and one of the drivers in Seoul would say, Ben Johnson, Canada, we'd say, no, Ben Johnson, Jamaica.
Hey, watch it, man.
That gets you where you need to go.
Sorry, but, you know, we weren't taking credit for him anymore.
Ken, when you look back at that, and, you know, that still, to me, is one of the, you know, earth-shattering moments in the Olympics. I mean, you think about it. The games always seem to have some kind of political connection, something that almost overrides them. Could you grasp the enormity of it all when you were in the moment there back in 88?
Yeah, you could, and especially when you got back to the broadcast center and you spoke when you're with everybody there within CBC and Brian Williams, who does such a magnificent job hosting, you got to talk with him, and people were distraught. Yeah, you did when you got there and around all the people and realized, oh my goodness, and I guess there was a lot of shame being felt at the time, and because it was such a high and then to get down such a low. Yeah, I think when you were around the people you did, but, you know, you're off to your own events again and you get busy doing your own thing, it sort of distracted you at the time. But, and then when you come home from the Olympics and so on, you realize, okay, this is still taking over the news for the next years to come.